My name is Katie Savinelli. I work for Syngenta Crop Protection, and I'm the Secretary Treasurer of IRAC U.S., and Graham Head, who's sitting in the front or second row, is with Monsanto, and he is the chairman of IRAC U.S., and so we're going to be moderating. I'll moderate the first half, and then Graham will moderate the second half. So as an introduction, what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, ooh, I forgot to turn the clock on. Okay, never mind. There we go. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the Insecticide Resistance Action Committee. I'm sure a lot of you know what the Insecticide Resistance Action Committee is, but just in case you don't, I'm going to explain it a little bit. And now the other thing is, the way to get to the next slide is to push the page down. Look at that. Okay, so what is IRAC? So IRAC is a task force. We're affiliated with CropLife, and CropLife is a consortium of chemical companies. And basically what this allows us to do is, you know, a lot of the companies get together and we can pool our resources to be more effective in terms of addressing IRM issues. Also, IRAC is very important as far as coordinating methodologies. On every single slide you can see on the bottom, I have this www.irac-online.org. That's the place you can go to find the methodologies and a lot of the other information. We also, resistance surveys, and we provide seed money to react to emerging issues. So we recently funded a couple of projects on Helicoverpa zea and some of the work that's being done by Bill Hutchinson and also Brad Hopkins down at Texas A&M. And then also another important role is that we play a role in IRM education, and we also work with the IPM centers. And there's four IPM centers across the U.S. as well as the Center for IPM. So we work with them. So who is the membership open to? The membership's open to any company that is currently producing insecticides or acaricides, and this can be both basic manufacturers as well as generic companies. And the requirement is that the representatives must be experienced and, you know, be sort of a person within the company that can be influential in making decisions. And the other thing I should mention is that this is a technical group, so we don't get into marketing issues or anything like that. We stay purely on the technical side, and this is an area we can work in without any problems with the FTC. These are the member companies. You can see we have 14 members. Mitsui is actually represented by Landis International, and they're the manufacturer or the registrant of dinotefuran or venom. And you can see that we have a pretty wide, large number of companies. We are always certainly looking for more company members. So if any of you are sitting in the audience that happens to be a company member and you don't see your name on this list, please come and talk to me afterwards and we will talk to you about joining. Okay, so let's just start off and talk a little bit about some of the principles of insecticide resistance management. You know, the first key principle, number one, of course, is to scout. You know, you need to determine that the insect's there before you apply the chemical. Use labeled rates, that's always important. And then also, and this is more of a generic statement or a general statement, but avoid respraying an insecticide with the same mode of action. As we get into some of the newer classes, we have specific guidelines around that, but you know, the basic framework of this is to try to not have the same mode of action the entire season. And then also looking at different control mechanisms. This could be host plant resistance, cultural controls, that type of thing. And then, and this is important, and this is going to lead into our symposium today. It's really important to follow the local IRM recommendations. A lot of the recommendations that we make may be more general, and when you get down to a local condition, that's where you have more specific recommendations. So that's really a key point. Let me talk a little bit about the mode of action classification. I'm assuming most people know about this, but this was a scheme, this is a scheme that's been developed by IRAC International, and we have, the groups are numbered 1 to 28, and there's also a separate group for the unknown mode of action. So each chemical fits into this mode of action classification, and that allows us to look at the class of chemistry in and of itself, and then also make guidelines based on the mode of action classification rather than on individual active ingredients. And as mentioned, all the current insecticides and acaricides are either in a group or a subgroup. And it's a key tool for IRM because it certainly does help the grower and the consultant, whoever else is using these products, to understand the mode of action classification. and it's used on labels, and on my next slide, it just talks about it. Over the last few years, this is not a requirement for us, but over the last few years, you will have seen more and more of the chemicals now having the mode of action classification right on the front page of the label, and it usually says, like with the neonicotinoids, it'll say group 4A neonicotinoid. So that's a good way of seeing what it is, because as you know, with all the different chemical names, even active ingredients, it's often hard to say what the mode of action is. And, okay. Let me just talk a little bit about some of the subcommittees. As mentioned before, with some of the newer classes of chemistry, we have mode of action groups. And so currently we have a neonicotinoid mode of action group. This has been in force or in activity probably for the last 6 years. All of the manufacturers of the neonicotinoids got together a few years ago and said, what are our best recommendations in terms of, using the product in the field, not using the entire season. And so what we strive to do is to have similar language on our labels that says, okay, if you go from one neonic to the other neonic, you will see very similar language as far as how to manage it, rather than each neonic having its own separate language. So that's one thing that we got together and did. And the diamide group is a new group, and that is also happening as we speak today. And so they're also striving to have very similar language. And then the other subgroup that we have, is, as I mentioned before, is the education group. And this is one that we've been working on over the years. And next year, we're going to even talk about, trying to revitalize this particular group. Okay, so some of the educational initiatives that we've had is we've had in the past articles, that should be comma, brochures and posters on the principles of IRM. The mode of action information, as I mentioned before, that you can find that easily on the website. Training material, we're going to next year even start taking a look at some of our training material. How many people have actually used the training material that's on the IRAC website? Okay, so since I have time, I'll ask this question. Do you find it useful, or is it could be improved? How many people find it useful? How many think it could be improved? Okay, good. Thank you. Well, this is kind of the feedback we want, because as we go forward next year, you may be getting a survey from us asking you more specifics about, how we can improve it, because, we recognize the fact that we haven't maybe revamped it in a few years, and it's time to, take another look and try to come up with something. Because I'm not sure how many, we have a lot of hits on our website every day, so this is a widely used website, so we want to make sure that the information is easy to find as well as being useful. Okay, and just as a thought, or just as some examples, these are some of the information you can find on the website. This poster in particular is a mode of action poster that specifically talks about where in the insect it affects, and a lot of them are the nervous system. This is the midgut, this cuticle system, so you can see it shows this. Now, the only thing I want to caution about the mode of action, this is a particular global website, and so a lot of times you may see chemicals or active ingredients that are not currently sold in the U.S. A few years ago, we put together a mode of action information based on products that are sold in the U.S. according to the classification, and we need to update that as well, because I won't say a negative, but that's only kind of the watch out, is some of the active ingredients are not registered in the U.S., so there may be some disconnects there. Okay, so leading into the symposium, as I mentioned before, the resistance management plans, they really need to be practical. So in other words, the grower can use them, understand them, and flexible. In other words, once you've put a system in place, if things change, we need to go back and reevaluate it and not say this is the way it's always going to be. And some of the key points you're going to hear today is it's really important to understand the complexity and the size of both the pest and the crop systems, because if you take a very narrow view, you may not necessarily address the problem. And likewise, if you assume, or from a grower's point of view, that your neighbor's going to take care of all the resistance management programs and you're not doing anything, that's not always the best thing. Certainly, there's no single one-size-fits-all strategy. You'll hear a lot of different strategies today, and some of them will be quite different. And then also the key point, and this is sort of like the driver of the whole reason why we had this symposium, is pests really don't honor property lines. And so that's why we chose the title of Entomology Without Borders. And then finally, the symposium objectives is we're going to look at how insecticide resistance is managed over large areas in a number of different insect plant systems. And then also, are some strategies better than others? I'm not sure if we're going to have all the answers today, but it's certainly something to consider. And then we'll have a really interesting presentation by Peter Ellsworth talking about, you know, it's all well and good to have resistance management plans, but do the growers actually follow them and understand them and use them the way we set them up? And I think I'm looking forward to hearing Peter's talk today.